fuck happens. Edgar, ta ha 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 hawk.
No, shut the fuck up.
Edgar, your polarity.
I fucking hate you.
Is reversed.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
You're inside the film pod. OSS 117.
Alrighty, thanks for joining us inside the film pod. I'm Adam Kara, and with me is Edgar. He's a small spy with a big ego. Ramirez. Edgar, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but you're numbered like a cow led to slaughter, you asshole.
Yeah, well, you're into beef like I'm into chicken.
You're into chicken? That's kind of gross, man.
Well, Jean Dujardin is. Dujardin, I don't know how to say his name.
In what film?
OSS 117, : Cairo, Nest of Spies? I don't remember. Do you remember? Cairo, Nest of something. Spies. The Nest of Cairo Spies, whatever it is. Yes, that is the film we're doing today, OSS 117. It is a spy comedy thing in the vein of, like, Austin Powers, but I'd say much higher brow. Yeah, because, you know, Skyfall is coming out. Huge deal. Apparently it's like one of the best Bond things ever. So we're doing OSS 117.
Actually, that's
something French
to say about that.
And we're hipsters, not really, but yeah, that is the movie for today. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say the fact that while you mentioned earlier that this is one of the probably Skyfall's gonna be one of the greatest James Bond films. What does it really take to be one of the greater ones?
Oh yeah, not I don't know, like. It is kind of funny because people are saying, you know, oh, this Bond film is like the best Bond film. At first I was like, oh, wow. And then I was thinking about it, like, not to say that Skyfall is going to be terrible or anything. I haven't seen it. But it actually, if you think about it, it doesn't take that much to be the greatest Bond film. Because when you really look hard, like, the Bond movies are never really, like, you know, that great. They're, like, they're fun, you know. So the good ones, you know, are very fun. But, you know, not necessarily great. I wouldn't really say there's one Bond film I'd say is, like, you know, deserving of an Academy Award or anything like that.
They're popcorn flicks.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, it's formulaic writing for the most part. You know, standard, you know, genre-defining movie, but, you know, doesn't really break out of its genre.
Well, since we're actually talking about espionage films, what espionage films have you seen?
Well, I mean, there's the Bourne films. I'm sort of a fan of those. They're, you know, I look at them almost in the same way as the Bond films, though. They're not really truly spectacular. I like, you know, the intensity of them. Of course, too much shaky cam and all that. But what I did want to bring to the table is Archer, because that actually is somewhat related. It's a TV show. I think Fox did it.
FX,
I watched it on
actually.
Netflix, so I have no idea. I'm pretty sure it's Fox.
It's FX.
Oh, FX?
Yeah.
Is that Fox?
It's a Fox subsidiary.
Okay, then. That's Fox. But, yeah, Archer is actually, I don't know, I recommend watching it. It's weird. I don't know. It's usually not my style of comedy because it has that, like, adult swimmy kind of humor sometimes. Actually, a lot of the times. But there's something different about Archer. And, like, it's sort of deadpan, I guess. Deadpan but not deadpan delivery. There's something just, like, mesmerizingly obnoxious about every single character in Archer, including Archer himself, that I just can't keep my eyes away from it. I've seen the first two seasons, which are the only ones on Netflix. I don't know if there are any other ones, you know, out there. Probably. Netflix usually doesn't have everything. But I, you know, I gobbled them up. I gobbled both seasons up.
Like all other TV shows.
I really like most of it for the most part. What?
Like all other TV shows, you just gobbled them up.
But yeah, any TV show I like, I will gobble it up. And so, yeah, I recommend watching Archer. It's funny. And everyone is a horrible person in that show. So what spy movie thingy do you want to discuss in our spy-isode? I don't know what the hell I'm calling it.
You already mentioned the aspect of, you know, Austin Powers and everything, but one that really falls kind of near to me is Johnny English, the one with Rowan Atkinson.
Didn't they make a sequel to that?
Yeah, they did. I discussed that in one of our former episodes. Go back and listen to it, listeners.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's basically a more clever aspect to, or a more clever twist to what happens in Austin Powers, except he's not much of a ladies' man. It's not quite as profound humor in the aspect of it's not so grotesque or so, well, toilet humor. But it is very...
Is it very Mr. Beanie?
Yeah, it's really Mr. Beanie. It's that kind of awkward humor that just can only be presented by Rowan Atkinson, or at least very well displayed. Mm-hmm. It's his trademark. None of the movies, I can really say, are very spectacular. And that's why I was mentioning earlier that James Bond is more just like a popcorn flick. It's something that you just kind of munch your popcorn and just kind of watch for fun. I mean, there's people out there who get really into it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's not something that I do personally, and that might kind of mar my view on most of these films.
Yeah, what Bond movies have you seen?
I'm trying to remember. I think I've seen Goldfinger and either Dr. No or From Russia with Love.
Dr. No is the first Sean Connery one.
Very first one.
And I think first Bond, right? Yeah. I don't remember what happens in that. I haven't seen it. I've seen You Only Live Twice. I've seen at least one other Sean Connery one, and I do not remember which one it is. If I were to describe it, it's hard to tell. He goes on an island. It's an Oriental island. Not You Only Live Twice, a different one. I think it's an Oriental island, and there's like a weird society dragon. Not society. I mean, like a weird base on it, and there's like a dragon thing. I don't remember. You can leave which Bond movie that is in the comments if you're that good and know what the hell I'm saying.
Out of one out of the...
And then I've seen the... I've seen... what is it? I don't remember. All the goddamn Bond movies have weird titles. Like, I know I saw one Pierce Brosnan one, and it's probably like, You Only Live Twice, Forever Again Tomorrow, To Die Another Day Yesterday. You know, something like that.
That's an exact title, by the way.
Yes, that is an exact title. That was the Pierce Brosnan one I saw. But I did see one Pierce Brosnan one. Oh, it was the one with Halle Berry, I'm going to say. I don't want to be racist. I probably just totally racist.
I have absolutely no idea.
It's some black chick, and I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it's Halle Berry, but I feel really, really wrong. And not racism. It's all female actresses blend together in my head. So there. I'm not racist. I'm sexist. That's better, right?
Not only that, but in all the James Bond films, they're basically just there as mannequins, or at least from what I've seen. Anyway,
M in the Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig ones is like an actual woman character who's not like objectified and pointless.
I also wanted to bring up something that you said earlier about Austin Powers.
Yeah.
You've seen all three of them, right?
No, I've not seen the second one.
Okay. Well, but you've
Does the second one have the boob robot ladies?
No, that's the first one.
Yeah, okay, then I've only seen the first and third one.
Okay, well, you've seen the third one, which is probably the most commemorated, I want to say, the one that's probably been seen the most.
I would say the first one has been seen the most.
Well, whichever one it may be. What was your opinion, or when was the last time you actually watched it?
Ooh, quite a while ago. I don't know, like 3 to 5 years ago.
3 to 5?
Yeah.
I know that the last time I watched it was probably back in about 2003. Though, I remember just laughing at it and finding that kind of comedy interesting, but then I didn't actually know that it was lampooning the already lampooned James Bond kind of flick. Because there's other films in the James Bond series that aren't in the Eon series that essentially lampooned its own thing. Like the original Casino Royale from 1967.
Yeah, with Woody Allen.
Yeah, that one. But I want to say that I've gone back and tried to watch them. I can't sit through them.
And oh, yeah. No, I do not like Austin Powers one bit. Mike Myers is awful in Austin Powers. I actually like Mike Myers in some other things. Not too many things. I like them in Inglourious Basterds. I think we've talked about this on the show. The problem with Austin Powers is just so... It's like a Will Ferrell movie setting where Mike Myers... He's acting like, haha, look at me, I am so funny, look how funny I am being. And he's aware of that. And, like, I've always found a problem with that because it's like, it's not funny. You take me out of it when you're like, oh, this is a big joke, look how jokey I am.
No, I can understand that. I mean, I've tried to watch it. I mean, the humor no longer really exists. It's just so saturated in the potty aspects of it. Like, it's so lowbrow. I don't really enjoy any of it. I have absolutely no way of other describing it than it's crap. It's one of those bad movies that everyone's seen.
Yeah. It's actually funny because I used to say Black Dynamite is basically like a good version of Austin Powers, but now that I've seen this movie, I can say that the title has moved over. Black Dynamite never really fit anyway because that's really 70s blaxploitation movies. But it has some weird similar feel to Austin Powers, but in a much better way because it is deadpan. But now OSS 117, clearly a superior version of Austin Powers.
Well, we'll end up talking about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. I just gave it all away. You can just turn off the podcast right now.
Anyway, what's on the news?
Right, to the news.
News.
Andy Serkis to direct Animals. Deadpool just needs people to make it for it to become a movie. Nicolas Cage is left behind. Harrison Ford was a robot! Yeah, so for that last one, Ridley Scott, in an interview talking about Prometheus 2, he also talked about Blade Runner 2, or the sequel to Blade Runner, and he was saying, it's not a rumor, it's happening with Harrison Ford. He doesn't know if it's happening with Harrison Ford. People, you know, he's asked if he was too old. He said, well, he was a Nexus 6, so we don't know how long he can live. And he laughs. And for me, this is huge, because it's like, I didn't know that. When you watch Blade Runner, it's not really ever clear. Spoiler for Blade Runner! Okay, but it's spoiler for even after you watch the movie.
Okay, this is what I have to say. That was the controversy, or at least that was something that I noticed as a flaw in the first film. It's like, is he supposed to be a replicant, or is he supposed to be human? What is he really? And then there's an emphasis there that it's such a powerful meaning if he's a human learning from another replicant who's supposed to not be able to show emotion or anything of the sort. But then there's this huge hint towards the end, which you can go back to our review from January, in which Edward Olmos leaves a unicorn there, and this can only be found in the theatrical cut, I think.
Or am I wrong? No, only in the director's cut.
Only in the director's cut, which adds that. And so if you watch the theatrical cut, that's just mind-boggling. It's like, what the hell does that mean?
Oh, no, it's in both cuts, but what's different is in the director's cut, there's an extra scene where Harrison Ford's character, dreams of a unicorn.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I didn't remember which cut it was because we watched both of them for the review. Mm-hmm. But it's that aspect where, what does that mean? What does that signify? Is he supposed to be a replicant? Is he not?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't find that a flaw in the movie. I would say, one of the great, I don't know how to describe it, but in the movie, you know, the replicants, the robots, have a lot more emotion than the main character, you know, Harrison Ford's character, who's really, a much darker, emotionless character. And so there's a nice weird, flip contrast between, your hero who's really like a villain almost.
But I feel that that story kind of doesn't work out if he's a replicant, because then he is a stereotypical replicant.
That's true. And also, I don't know what that adds to the plot. He's a replicant. And what? I don't, that doesn't really add to the story. That's not really. I guess maybe in the sequel it will be an issue. And so he'll use that. But as far as the first movie is concerned, that's really not important at all.
It really isn't. But what's the other news before we end up ranting over all of it?
Okay. Andy Serkis to direct Animals. So Andy Serkis is going to make his directorial debut. For those of you who don't know, Andy Serkis is Gollum. And also Caesar in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Haven't seen it, but apparently he was good in that. He's the mocap man. He's going to, I said direct Animals in that. He's going to make his directorial debut with a animated version, a mocap version, obviously, of Animal Farm, Orwell's Animal Farm.
Oh, that will be interesting.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
Is he going to be
I'm just going to be interested in how the new screenplay or whatever that's going to take this book or, put it to the screen is going to... Because, Animal Farm's all about communism, and that's not exactly as relevant anymore. So maybe they'll, try to put, an economy spin on it, because that's, the new thing now is the economy and corporation and all that kind of stuff. So who knows exactly what direction they're going to go in with that. But, yeah, it's a big thing. Andy Serkis is going to direct. And it's always big news when an actor turns into a director for some reason.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the other two interpretations of George Orwell's story?
What do you mean?
The not 1984, but Animal Farm. The
I've never seen or read Animal Farm. I only heard about it and read about it.
Oh well, then. Yeah.
I've seen and read 1984.
No, so have I.
Yeah.
But the aspect of the other two versions, which I've seen both the animated and the other live action one, they just
Animated 1984?
Yes. No, 1984 Animal Farm.
Oh yeah.
Neither one of them was really that compelling. It felt too long in some aspects, which is why I'm hoping that he, considering that he knows how the animal motions is, and maybe he has some interpretation with it, because he's always behind the scene and portraying some kind of beastly animal.
Yeah, we have no idea how he's going to be. This is his directorial debut, so who knows what this is going to be like. Hopefully he does not learn from Peter Jackson as far as editing is concerned and make like a three-hour goddamn movie.
Eight. It'll be eight.
Yeah. An eight-hour epic. It comes in two parts, like Twilight.
I don't know. I just find it interesting because I want to see. I love George Orwell's writing. It's interesting. It's sci-fi-ish, and all of that aspect. It's just very difficult to really adapt it to screen properly.
I'd say 1984, while like really leaving out a lot of Orwell's ideas in the book, was still a good movie. And it was Richard Burton's, I think, last movie, too. And he had a wonderful performance in that.
I watched it so many years ago, I can't even fully remember. I think it must have been like 10 years ago now, almost.
Mm-hmm. So next item, Deadpool just needs people to make it for it to become a movie. There's actually, Deadpool apparently does have Ryan Reynolds attached to it. Me, I'm like, ugh, why? Why are people excited about this? Like, I don't want it to get made if Ryan Reynolds is attached. What, you know, Green Lantern, how'd that turn out? They have a director, I don't know the name, and they have a screenplay. They just need to be greenlit, apparently. But for me, I don't know. This has just been an ongoing thing. This Deadpool movie has been, like, is going through development hell. And so I just found it interesting that there was still news about it. It was just like, oh, it just needs to be greenlit to be made. It's just like, yeah, it just needs to have people to make it.
No, it's never a good thing for a movie to go in through development hell or any type of media for that.
Yeah, so. You're the comic book guy. What do you think of Deadpool?
I think Deadpool's a very funny character, and he's interesting.
So Deadpool have his own comic series? Or how,
yeah, he does.
He's in the X-Men universe, right? He's a Brotherhood guy?
Well, he originally started off as Weapon X, I believe. I can't really remember. I never really got into him because he's just like the merc with a mouth. He's a very witty, very personified, fourth wall-breaking character. Essentially a Spider-Man, but more vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that aspect where I can understand why they'd want Ryan Reynolds. He has that type of wit and personality, linked to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel he would suit the character very much. As we can tell, he didn't do very well with the Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And even with Blade Trinity, he didn't do very well in that either. And his small role in Wolverine Origins, X-Men Origins, which is why he has this role, didn't really suit him either. So it's a number of things that maybe they should consider recasting and get someone who's actually funny.
Yeah, get some star power, and that'll maybe help the movie. Real star power. Sorry, Ryan Reynolds. And maybe this movie will get made, Who would you cast?
Who would I cast?
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who would be fit at this age and time. I mean, if they wanted to make it really, humorous and show him aging. Because the thing is, what's his name? Deadpool is supposed to be a guy who has, cancer, but is given, regenerative qualities. So what happens is the cancer is cured, but the cancerous is, mutated in some sort. So he's constantly dying, but reviving himself. So it drives him crazy.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking it's, a character who would be able to play such would be someone who's too old now, like Bill Murray or, actors of...
That is an interesting choice. I never thought of that at all. But yeah, I guess you mean younger Bill Murray.
Yeah, younger Bill Murray or even Jack Nicholson or other characters. While they might not fit the bill, they would fit the character's persona or aspects of through their other roles.
Jack Nicholson makes more sense to me. A young Jack Nicholson. I get that.
Yeah. It's just they would never be able to fit his physique.
Well, yeah, now, obviously.
Not even in the past, because he's supposed to be very... well built, and then
Jack Nicholson, he was for a time.
For a time,
yeah.
No, I agree. For a time, I don't know. And then the thing you also have to worry about is when you make superhero movies, whether you really want to cover their face as often as they do, because part of the star power comes from the face.
Yeah.
Just because it's a person's voice there doesn't necessarily explain the same thing. So you might not want to. Ryan Reynolds, I guess, makes sense in that aspect because people don't go and see Ryan Reynolds. They enjoy his comedy. Or wit.
Yeah.
Or wit, so-called.
Yeah. So next item, Nicolas Cage is left behind. That is referring to Nicolas Cage, I believe, is going to direct. I don't exactly remember. I should have done my homework more. But he's attached to a remake or reboot of the Christian movie Left Behind. You know about that, Edgar?
I actually have no idea.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, Left Behind is a story about people on Earth who get left behind during the rapture. So, because they weren't, faithful and good and all that. So when everyone else gets raptured up, they're left behind. And the story's about them on Earth during the apocalypse, I suppose. I have not seen the movie. It's relatively famous. The Simpsons had a huge parody of it. But yeah, Nicolas Cage in that. I actually agree. I think that could be great in like a terrible Nicolas Cage way, But I think that, I like that idea of Nicolas Cage running around during the apocalypse on Earth.
I have something to ask. Yeah. If this is going to be his directorial debut, do you think that this is kind of a risky thing, considering that films usually involving very strong Christian, overtones?
Any kind of religious overtone.
Well, yeah, but considering we're more of a Christian country and everything.
Yes.
Do you not wonder if that might be a little bit, not necessarily controversial, but a little bit of a risk to...
Depending on how it treats religion. The original Left Behind movies were, pro-Christianity and all that. Because, the idea of the movie is like, this will happen to you if you don't, pray and be and have the Jesus in you. I don't know what direction this movie is. I don't know Nicolas Cage's religious preference. But I'm assuming it probably will continue being pro, Christianity and all that. Considering just the whole plot of the movie. You could easily, a good writer could easily spin that the other way. But I do not think it is that. Although, this is very early in development.
Yeah, we never know how this might end up changing around and everything. I don't know, it's just he doesn't seem like the type who would be making such a, overly religious film, I want to say.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, I feel, to me it's going to be like the vein of like, what does Tom Hanks do? What do you call it? Da Vinci Code. That had controversy, but, that piddled out pretty quick. Even The Master that just came out has controversy about it because Scientologists are pissed off, but it piddled out. People really don't care. I just love the idea of Nicolas Cage running around during the apocalypse. Nicolas Cage would be left behind. We'd see him, when we'd get left behind during the rapture. I would go and try to find Nicolas Cage and stick to him.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He'll just end up becoming a skull on flames and everything. It'll be okay. Just get his motorcycle. Anyways, I think we've kind of ranted ourselves.
Yes. Speaking of Left Behind, the news is now being left behind. So, yes, back to spy stuff. Time to move on to the movie OSS 117. Let's start with the synopsis.
Synopsis.
Agent 117, played by Jean Dujardin, investigates the murder of his fellow agent, Jack Jefferson, amongst a network of spies in a journey of espionage, lovemaking, poultry, and weenie rumors. The main character, Agent 117, his friend / agent, he's like Agent 238 or something like that, gets killed, and so he must investigate and figure out what's going on in Cairo, because that's where Jack Jefferson, the agent that's been killed, died. He was working before being killed, and so it's hard to really say what goes on after that. Because I would say really the plot is actually one of the faultier parts of the movie. Not that this is a bad movie, mind you. I've already said I like it a lot. Ed, you want to give me your deal?
Okay, let me just chime in slightly and feel free to come in.
Yeah, I always do.
I was trying to compare this film not only to Austin Powers, which we were mentioning earlier, but What Up, Tiger Lily?
Oh, yeah, no, that came to my mind, too. It's actually weirdly like What's Up, Tiger Lily. I wouldn't say, I don't know, but because What's Up, Tiger Lily's, you know, redubbed is a little bit zanier. Just because there's a between dialogue and action. But there is a weird similarity, which is a good one.
I felt like the filming in this film was also, or the grain that they used, the filter maybe, that it made it look like it was part of the 1960s or around the era that, you know, the original Sean Connery films would be coming out, 1966 or so.
Oh, yeah, real quick. John Dujardin looks a whole lot like young Sean Connery. I did not know that at all. I saw The Artist. Oh, yeah, I never mentioned the main guy in this is the main guy, George Valentin, in The Artist. And so he won Best Actor. I don't know if he should have won Best Actor for that, but whatever. That's aside. Same guy. And pretty cool, actually. And I just never noticed. They look totally like Sean Connery. Like, the mustache does a lot. When you remove the mustache, it really makes him look a lot more like Sean Connery. They're not exactly the same. There's something totally different with the nose, but it's certain angles and certain lighting looks exactly the goddamn same. Which is obviously why they cast him. One of the reasons.
Or at least that's why it feels like it. But the character is also just very periodical, I think it would be the word.
I don't think so. You mean he happens every month or two?
Not necessarily. I mean, he's a major parody of the whole espionage.
Oh, aspect. I see what periodical. Okay, never mind. Go on. Yes, and he's a big parody. Yeah,
he's a big parody, and especially towards the Sean Connery, James Bond, and some of the others. Not so much any of the later ones. I've seen any of them, obviously. But where I was drawing the aspects towards him and Woody Allen's film, it's just, it was so overtly done. You know, he was just overacting and he was being very just forward and
Austin Powers, you mean.
Violent. Well, no, even in the other one.
Okay.
What Up, Tiger Lily? When it comes down to Austin Powers, it was the overly sexualized dialogue.
Not even just that, just Austin Powers' face. That smile with the shitty teeth.
No, I'm
he looks at the camera and... Huh?
I'm comparing the two.
Yeah, I'm just saying like that it's really overacted.
Yeah, of course. But it's felt more natural in this one. It felt more 1960-ish, while the other one was just purposely looking straight at you, breaking the fourth wall as constantly as possible. And it knew, it was aware of it, but it wasn't aware in a good way, the Austin Powers films.
Mm-hmm.
While this one was aware of it in the right ways, it was that aspect where the innuendos were there and the over-sexualized dialogue. And
you're talking about Tiger Lily?
I'm talking more about the OSS.
Oh, okay.
Where it's just so blatantly there, but it's not trying to rub it in your face. Oh, look, this is what they used to do. It's more of that we're doing it the way that they used to,
mm-hmm.
just making it far
but
more...
But giving light on it, which is part of humor. Yeah, I mean, you know, what do you got? Octopussy, one of the Sean Connery things, you know?
Pussy galore.
Yeah, pussy galore, whatever. What is Octopussy?
I don't want to know.
That is from something.
No, that is...
some spy thing. Anyway, yeah, Pussy Galore is what I meant to say. You know, when you think about that, like, what happens in OSS is actually pretty mild compared to that.
It's from James Bond, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, there's just that aspect where this film is so aware of what it's trying to accomplish. There's a lot of... vulgar dialogue. There's a whole explanation about how a revolver.
Oh yes, the scene where, Agent 117 is with this. I'll just say princess, this woman, and he's talking about reloading a pistol, and he puts it, you know, he like lowers it down by his penis, and innuendo ensues.
Not so much innuendo, more just. Straightforward.
Yeah, I guess this is like not even innuendo. It's just blatant penis reference.
And I mean, I laughed at this. This is some of the funnier
yeah.
parts.
Well, I mean, John Desjardins is really excellent at acting. He's got that like Leslie Nielsen quality where you can say ridiculous, funny things, but act as if you are serious. You know, that is deadpan, and deadpan is the best kind of pan.
Anyway, I do have to mention this before we go any further. This film is completely in French, and it's only dubbed in English. Not even dubbed, it's subbed in English.
Which is, to me, preferred. I've never wanted to watch anything dubbed, because it just is different actors. I mean, unless it's dubbed on purpose, like What's Up, Tiger Lily, but yeah.
I just have to mention this because I know that some of the listeners may not like the whole reading a movie instead of just watching. So,
or the blind people, they can't read the subtitles.
I don't know why a blind person would watch a movie in the first place.
Okay, I want to see if you catch that. They get the Braille. Like, Braille pops up and they can read the subtitles.
3D?
Yeah, just, in 3D. There you go.
Okay, before we go off ranting anymore, I don't know, it's just... It's difficult to explain this movie because it had the slow pacing of the 1960 films. And then it was just very... how would I put this? Cartoonish in that fashion? It was just very self-aware.
Yeah, no, it was really well done. Like Black Dynamite, really put itself technologically into what it is parodying. Like, there are even... This is made in 2006, but there are scenes where the characters get in a car, and it really is jarring and surprising at first when you see that. But they, you know, just like in the old Sean Connery movies, they're in the car, but there's totally just like a screen behind them, and it's just showing film, and it's like that, you know, they're in a car, but not really driving. And yeah, like you mentioned, the film grain, they shoot, you know, it's probably shot on like film or something to make it a bit older feeling. And they use like stock footage sort of, you know, to transition between the traveling and stuff. So in that same way, like Black Dynamite, you know, they use the technology as another aspect of their parody.
I also wanted to bring up that I feel like this movie also makes satirical statements about the French. Because there's a whole series where 117 is actually relaxing. He's going to sleep. And then the morning prayer happens. They're in Cairo, in case you guys... We didn't mention this. So the whole... What did it be called? The morning prayer?
Yeah. You know, Muslims, they have to pray... you know, the different times of the day, and they had the muezzin or something like that? I don't remember the name.
That's what I think they called
it. Yeah, is doing that morning prayer thing, and Agent 117's character is completely oblivious to this, and yells at him and tries to get him to shut up, and eventually does get the guy to shut up, which is obviously disrespectful for the religion. And like throughout the movie, he is completely Agent 117 is completely ignorant of the Muslim faith. And really a lot of everything. Anything that's not French. I love one of my favorite jokes. The woman, one of the women, called. She's like, "Oh, you're really French." And Agent 117 looks at her and he's like, "Thank you."
No, I agree. It's just that I wonder if the film is trying to make that satirical commentary on the just French people in general.
Yeah, but this is a French film, so it is great. And offers, like, you know, a satire of French culture from the inside, makes it much more genuine.
No, I know. That's what I was saying. Because I know that the American satire, a whole bunch, make satirical comments of everything. But it's only funny when it's actually made inside. Which I wonder whether that's a reason why I felt some of the jokes felt flat. Like,
oh, yeah. Sometimes they're like, haha, this is just like that French thing that we all French people know about. Isn't that funny? And you're like, I don't get it. Is that funny?
Like, we can understand some of the comedy. It's like, I guess it's supposed to be funny, but it's... Us being American, we don't understand the aspect, or we don't understand some of the jokes.
I didn't really have a big of a problem with that. For me, I don't know, the movie was just shot and written really well. So well that, like, even when I didn't get the joke, I laughed anyway because there's just... I knew it was funny, even though I didn't know. It's like laugh track, but there was no laugh track. Like, I could just tell by the way it was timed that, like, oh, that was funny. Just because, I don't know, just the form and everything compensated for my lack of knowledge. And of course, the performances, again, Jean Dujardin is really phenomenal, actually, in this movie.
Anyway, I'm not going to say that I didn't laugh. I understood a lot of it, just like you were laughing through the film a lot more than
I was. Yeah, I liked it a lot more than you did. Not that you didn't like it, it's just I enjoyed it even more.
No, and it's just, I smirked a lot, and I was just like, that's really funny, you know, I get it, there's humor, but it's just some of the relevance to it, though just kind of... Going off the comedy and going straight into what I felt the characters were, they were all underdeveloped except for 117, and even then, I guess it's just a common trope in spy films to not really develop, but just allow them to be
the super secret. Well, yeah, because spy movies are action movies, and, you know, in most action movies, especially bad ones, characters are secondary to action sequences, or in the case of a spy movie, the suspense of espionage, you know.
They downplayed a lot of the suspense, though.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that I think we'll talk about later in the movie, is there was really not much action, a lot of talking.
But I'll
go into that later. I mean, like, the movie does some things that very much makes up for this.
Well, how about we move off that part and go straight into the plot and just speak of that?
Yeah, that is the first flaw I want to talk about, because that's, to me, the biggest one. Is overall, I don't know, I found myself, I didn't really get what the hell was even going on. Part of it was, I will admit, like, just the subtitles, and I haven't seen a subtitle movie in a long time. So it was just went by a little fast, and so it just took me a little bit extra longer to be like, oh, okay, that's what they were saying before. But another part is just it's really convoluted, because this movie is quite ambitious, which is something I respect, because, I mean, there are Nazis in this movie, and this place takes place in 1955. I will say no more about that, but that is just an example of, like, how many different things this movie tries to shove into itself to make fun of the spy genre. And, you know, it to me, it's like the convolution of the plot is summed up really in the beginning, where Agent 117's, like, boss character is describing his mission. And I don't even remember half of what he said. All I remember he said, the Americans are involved, the Soviets are involved, the British are involved, and you have to go to Egypt. Oh, also, there's this faction, the Eagle something? The Eagle Fugles? I don't remember what they're called. And it's just like, what? And then they go there, and then he is head of a poultry company, and he has competitors with beef and
lamb.
And just, like, at this point, I just don't even know what is going on. And remind you that he's supposed to be investigating the death of his friend Jack, Jeffrey. So it's just, it's a little, like, I don't know what's going on at first. And that is a problem. Because I feel like the movie might have been a little more streamlined if the plot was simpler. I understand why they did it, though, because, like, the whole poultry part of it was just this huge joke on how spies, you know, speak in code. There was a lot of that in this movie. This whole, like, how's the beef stroganoff? You know, oh, it was excellent this summer. You know, that kind of speaking. And the whole, like, poultry company is a front for spy dealings is one huge part of this movie, as well as trying to also tie in the Nazis and the Middle Eastern factions and Russian espionage. Like, you know, the fact that you're trying to do all this at once, it's, you know, it makes it convoluted.
I also wonder if this is just supposed to be satire towards the Sean Connery films, because some of those did feel overly zealous, too convoluted themselves, because some of the plots would just go on forever and ever, and you would never really know, well, what was this person supposed to signify again? Who was this person? What was that? What just happened? And I wonder if that's just supposed to represent that kind of satire, or just in the aspect of, as you were mentioning, it's just crazy. He goes in and gets a job working for poultry, and it's just a job that he gets just to take cover or just to be undercover. I don't know if he does hide his name, though, does he?
Yeah, he does. He's like Lucian Bro something. I don't remember. He says a different name, although it almost doesn't matter. I think the convolution is just because of the ambitiousness of this movie, because they're trying to do so much in this. They're trying to, you know, make fun of, you know, two decades worth of movies in this one movie. So, you know, that's why you have Nazis and you have Soviets, just because those were, like, you know, two of the biggest things in spy movies. And then you also have the Middle Eastern stuff.
But doesn't,
so you just have all those things in one movie, and that does hurt it in one part. But it also makes it have a lot. This movie has a lot you can remember about it and laugh about. So it's like a big sample platter of spy genre.
No, I agree. It is, just after listening to what you had mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't really dock too much of the film. I can only say that it's just, due to that, it feels kind of lost.
Mm-hmm. But But what this movie does that makes up for it, and what makes this whole movie watchable, is it makes you laugh, one. And two, it has, I don't know, you said, like, the character is underdeveloped. I feel like there are a few key characters, though, that hold you together. That's, of course, Agent 17, and then what's his foreman, Salim, something like that. And then the two women who are great. And then the character also has flashbacks, and every flashback is wonderful and really just helps Agent 117, who is the character you follow through this whole thing. And so since he is a good, like, island, he's a good pillar for this movie, you can forgive some of the convolution that the plot withholds, as long as, you know, if you like the character.
I actually wanted to go back and talk about the character real quickly, because there was something that I noticed about him. He had these little quirks. For example, every single time someone would mention Jack, or at least the first few times, he would have these insane flashbacks, as you just mentioned. And it was, they were, I don't know how to explain, very profound with a,
profound is a nice way to put it.
Profound with overtones of sexuality,
mm-hmm.
I guess, to place it lightly. And then whenever anyone would tell him anything, due to his ignorance, he would always question, what? Huh? The? Every single time. And then he would use the common trope of just saying the wrong thing and being corrected by the people, especially when he's being, not victimized, but being held captive.
Yeah.
And I found these quirks really funny, especially because it's not something that you see in a spy. Usually a spy is very confident and very powerful, and he's...
Well, he is, though. That's the thing, is... that's why this character is actually surprisingly deep and interesting, is because he has this shell of overconfidence and macho-ness, which actually does play out. He's a very good fighter, apparently, which reminds me of Archer. Like, Archer is completely incompetent and yet totally good at being a spy. Which is exactly like Agent 117. Like, he is super overconfident, super cocky, and super oblivious to what's actually going on, and yet does get the job done. And then he also has this weird, vulnerable side and past, and this hilarious. And, like, you know, he has different character quirks. Like, he's not necessarily OCD, but he is sort of, like, concerned with dirt and cleanliness.
Which doesn't pay off.
And this is reflected in certain parts of the movie, and it does pay off later on. And so, yeah, like I was mentioning before, that Agent 117 is a deep character and really basically just holds this whole movie together.
Do you have any other flaws?
Right. The other flaw was action and the lack thereof. I feel like the end half did a better job at tying action and comedy together. But I feel like really the first three quarters of the movie, first half of the movie, was really without, like, good action, which I feel like isn't a huge flaw. It's a very small one. I just feel like they could have been more action because it is a spy movie and there wasn't as much suspense. It's hard to have suspense when it's comedy, because comedy is, like, the complete opposite of suspense and tension, and relieves it. So you can't have as many, like, oh, there's the bad guy and he's going to poison the thing, you know, like in so many spy movies. There's one scene where, like, the main character is trying to listen in on a conversation, but then he ends up breaking into a whole dance sequence, or, you know, sing-song dance sequence thing. Yeah, that completely diffuses tension and is good. I just feel like some parts do feel a bit long because of that. I think there are some jokes that they could have just edited out. Like, I mean, a lot of they basically held in more time for jokes, but it's due to this whole convolution of the plot. It's kind of related in that it's convoluted and feels long, and there is no action, so it all kind of ties together. But again, it makes you laugh, and that really makes it all worth it.
Well, the only thing I want to bring up is most espionage films, or at least I feel a good one, would happen to have some sort of commentary, like some aspect where they want you to know what's happening in the world around you. So I feel that this movie was trying to play off of that, but since it didn't try to mention anything spectacular or anything very specific, it just kind of felt off. Because I know that there's a lot of action films out there that involve espionage acts in them, and then they're very heavy on explosions and violence and all of this, but most of them I feel are more talking than action. So I feel the slow pacing is with the territory of, you know, this style of film.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, to go off of what you said before, one of the problems, it's not, maybe it's addressed in the movie, it's not exactly sure, is this movie really stays within the confines and makes fun of its genre, but does not necessarily go beyond and criticize the genre itself. I mean, it does in some ways, as it, you know, it parodies and satires it, but it, I don't know. I don't know if it takes that one extra step and really makes a profound statement about that genre and what it says about people to enjoy that genre. You know, I'm going to bring back Cabin in the Woods because it's really a great example of taking a genre and then seeing what that genre says about humanity and human psychology. And I do not think, you know, OSS 117 does that. Maybe one of the things it does do is, you know, it is about the character and how his overconfidence can reflect, like, French, you know, the French culture in general, in that French pretentiousness. So there is one part of that, but that's not necessarily about the genre. And then, like, his complete obliviousness about the whole Muslim society. Like, when this movie was made, 2006, so there was a large Muslim population. I do not know the intent of the filmmakers, but there might actually be a statement there about Agent 117's lack of knowledge about the Muslim, you know, religion might reflect on French culture at that time. I do not know, though. But again, yeah, it doesn't make fun of the, or it doesn't really go beyond its own genre. Which isn't a huge criticism. I mean, that's just what separates a good movie from a truly great movie. And this is a good movie.
I agree. Anyway, yeah. Before we rant off over, do you have any more to say?
No, I think I've said all I really need to say.
I think I got.
Do you have anything else?
No, Dad? I do not.
You want to give your rating?
You give yours off first. I think you might be
okay.
A little bit more.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of this. I mean, I love comedy. I would definitely say theater. For everybody. I mean, if you love the spy genre, actually, then if you're a James Bond fan, then this is a must-see. But for most people, you know, I'm a casual James Bond fan. I haven't seen that many movies, I think, like a lot of people. So, but definitely theater. I mean, this movie's just good in its own way. It's just really funny. Really written, actually, quite well, and performed well as well. A lot of wells there. So, yeah, theater. For most people, must see for spy fans.
Well, for me, the aspects of the film where it's too long at some points and it's a little drawn out. There's a few things that kind of bore you. There's a few things that you won't understand. But overall, the film was very funny and it was very well made. There's no real big flaws. It's just not quite to the exceptional aspects of giving it such a high rating as a theater. But I do feel people should watch this, and I'll give it a matinee for that reason.
Oh, matinee. I will say one thing, Edgar. This might make you change your matinee. There is a scene where two people throw chickens at each other. Say no more. You had me at chickens throwing.
No,
using chicken as weapons.
Matinee.
No, still matinee.
The only
what else? What else could I tell you? Nazis and videotape thing.
All now right. You're just getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, chickens are thrown in this movie. I have no idea if real chickens are harmed or not. I hope not.
I hope
chickens
not
are
either.
Adorable. Okay, so yeah, that's it. We have nothing more to say about OSS. Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually weirdly relevant because Skyfall is coming out, and you know, we haven't seen it, so who knows? I might want to come back to this movie after seeing Skyfall and see what applies and what doesn't. So that might be interesting. So yeah, you know, when you feel like watching Skyfall, you know, give us a listen.
And
yeah. And give us a listen. All right, that's it. That's it for the Film Pod. Thanks for listening. I am Adam Kara, and you can follow me at FilmyFilm on Twitter. And what is my fucking email? FilmyFilm@mail.com. Edgar, over to you.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Edgar Takaram. Please like our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, Facebook. That exists.
Help us promote ourselves and make sure that we can get as many listeners as possible.
Yeah, we have an RSS feed. There's a link to the feed in iTunes on the page.
Yeah, so if not that, you know, if you're always on the move, download us on iTunes. You know, listen to us as you go on your run or do anything, you know, or commit that murder or something like that.
Yeah, I just capture some people, force them to listen to the podcast or something. I assume you have friends, at least one or two, maybe none. Imaginary friends, maybe. Have them listen. And tell your friends, kids.
And please, if you have any criticisms or anything, just either write it on our wall or send us a message and tell us. And
yeah, comment on the site. You can do that. I think you can do it anonymously, I'm pretty sure.
We just want to know anything that we can do to better the show for you.
Alrighty. Thanks for listening.